Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Marquise Munson behind the glass. And Joe, what a win it was for the Nashville Predators last night. 2-0 against the Dallas Stars in a game where I thought really from start to finish, they played pretty well. And we've been waiting on that for a while. And I thought really for the first time in a long time, especially against that team, against the Stars, they were in total control of that game from start to finish. And I know from the Twitter reaction I saw last night, and I think just from talking to the players in the locker room, that was a relieving sight, I think, for a lot of people.
That was a solid hockey performance. And I think this team, for one thing, Robbie, it's great to be able to just talk about something different, you know?
Yeah.
Because we've been talking about the same things. So you get two power play goals. Forsberg breaks the drought. And right after Forsberg, you know, had a beautiful opportunity from Roman Josi, and he sent it wide, and you're like, oh, man, he's just in something. It's just not going to happen for him. And they get in the power play and gets one to sneak through, you know. But Forsberg scoring, Duchesne scoring, so there's two of the guys we talk about all the time. Power play working. And I think this team is just better in like a 2-1 kind of game than in a 6-5 kind of game, because those tend to go the other way too much. They were just and you could tell, like, think about like John Hines last night compared to John Hines 4 days earlier. It was like basically the opposite. You know, he really liked what his team did. Yeah, and he, just like most coaches, he's focused on the process, on the things that you have to do, all these little things to give yourself a chance to produce and win. And it was pretty obvious that he really liked what he saw out there.
It was. And we knew heading into the game last night that it was going to be a special environment at Bridgestone Arena. And I thought the pregame stuff, Craig Morgan coming out singing the national anthem, the moment of silence, just everything that went on last night in Bridgestone Arena. They're selling the Nashville Strong shirts. I have one of those on right now. Really cool design, really cool everything.
Big line for those.
Big line for those. I think those are going to be really, really popular even in the coming days as we move forward here. But I thought, you know, the Predators knew, and from talking to him yesterday at Morning Skate, they needed to come out tonight and give the city and this area something to cheer for. I thought they did a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, I mean, sometimes that pressure can work against you too, because look, I mean, you're playing a game and we're talking about serious stuff
right
here, and of course there's emotion, but that doesn't necessarily mean the home team's always going to win in those situations. So I don't know if it was really a factor, but certainly those guys are affected by it, and it's been on their minds. And so I thought, as usual, the Predators did a really good job of, you know, of handling that moment. And, you know, this team, whatever it is, you know, this team needs to take a lot of what they did last night and try to bottle it. But, you know, the reality is we were kind of talking doom and gloom and on this recent streak of poor play. Like, man, they could be, like, out of things next week.
Yeah.
And then you have a performance like this and you're like, can they just keep duplicating it? And probably not. Like, they're gonna have a tough time. I would imagine Dallas, which has now lost four straight, is going to be awfully motivated in their own building Saturday. But I think this is another reminder, like, this is going to the end. These guys have enough. They're good enough to make it go to the end, and they're probably going to have some performances along the way that you're like, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to – it's if it's not down to the last couple games, I'll be very surprised.
I will too. And, you know, you mentioned special teams. The power play last night scores two goals. The penalty kill, really for the last little while here, has been really good. I think they killed off like seven penalties against Minnesota.
And using all kinds of different guys,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, lots of different guys, lots of different looks. Guys who the last 4 years never would have been on the penalty kill. I mean, last night they had Corbinian Holzer and Jared Tenorti
just
as
get
one
out
of their
there.
Pairings on the penalty kill. Yeah, like, go ahead. Yeah, sure. Go
Forbes,
out there. Why not?
Forbes with a K.
Oh, man. Is it a coincidence that they are undefeated and unscored upon when good Corbs is in the lineup?
There's a Jim Diamond. Jim Diamond actually did a whole haiku about him. So
I mean, why would you not?
Hey, but, you know, John Hines liked the pairing, and it looked fine to me. I mean, they've been trying to find something, you know, and that third pairing. So maybe this is it. But you're right, the penalty kill, which was a – think about what a problem that was earlier in the season, doesn't look like a problem anymore.
No, it doesn't, which is very good news for the Predators. Joe, you mentioned earlier the chance – that Forsberg missed. So, like, Yossi's bringing the puck in the zone. He beats everybody wide, and he fires one across ice to Forsberg. Who, I mean, the net is wide open.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a layup, essentially, and he just flubs it to the right. And I was thinking to myself, sitting there in the press box, oh, my God, he's not going to score again for the rest of the year.
Exactly.
I was like, the frustration level going through his head right now has just got to be – insane. And then it's funny because he comes back a couple minutes later, scores the goal on a shot that really wasn't all that good. It just kind of found its way.
It's kind of trickled
in there. And sometimes that's what it takes, I guess. It's just keep firing away.
Well, and also, like, you know, on that power play sometimes, and I know it's always we'll sit here and say, oh, just shoot the puck. But I thought last night a lot of what they did really well was be patient and find better shots. But still, sometimes, you know, you're on the power play, you want to set it up. No, like, you've got a lane. Shoot it.
Yeah.
And he did. So, you know, you just got to react and play hockey. And I think sometimes when you're struggling, you overthink things. And I think certainly we've seen that a lot with this group on the power play. There's an example of just, well, just put it up there. Yeah. And, you know, he's got a heck of a shot, and he got it through. So that maybe that's a hot streak starter for him. And again, to Shane – again, I know he scored, so that's one thing, but I thought he was good.
He looked really good last night.
He's also, like, the most positive person ever, right?
I mean,
does Duchesne ever get mad or, you know, like, think anything's bad? Like, you know, he's
I
just –
I don't know.
He is
not
Mr.
in the media,
he's Mr.
Anyway.
Sunshine.
He is in the media, for sure.
That was a good performance. I thought Johansson, like, had some chances last night.
I had a couple people tweet me and be like, when's Johansson going to get it figured out? I thought he was fine last night. He played pretty well.
I mean, he had – yeah, there were a few moments where he was in there and he looked big and fast and dangerous. And, you know, that's a start.
That is a start. I mean, you got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. And then Arvidsson looks hurt again, so.
Man. He took like two penalties last night, wasn't it? In the offensive zone, both of them. I was just like, oh, boy. Can't have those. Those are the ones that hurt, is the offensive zone penalties when, you know, you're 200 feet away from your own net. Those are the ones you don't really want to have.
No.
And they were effort penalties. Like, it's not like he was out there just doing
one of them I thought was
stuff.
Was kind of a weak call, but yeah. Yes. But I look at him, and I think that Ryan Hartman smashed to the – wrist,
yeah.
Arm, hand is lingering.
Lumberjack competition he was in, chopping the tree down there. Yeah. I mean, that was a heck of a slash. Look, for those of you who have never held a hockey stick, that thing hurts when you swing it around. And there was a lot of force on Hartman's slash the other night, directly on Arvidsson's hand. As soon as that happened, I was like, well, okay. And he just broke his hand. And he came back in the game. And I guess he's fine, but...
Yeah, but he's not fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, former Predators making things tough. Kevin Fiala, Ryan Hartman.
How about them? They won the game last night. Minnesota beats San Jose. They're in the first wild card spot.
How about that? All of a sudden.
Preds had the second wild card spot for about, hour last night. They were back in the playoffs. Vancouver now in the second wild card spot. Vancouver is reeling a little bit. And all of a sudden, Vancouver has a game in hand on the Predators. So we've talked about the Predators having a game in hand on pretty much everybody in the Western Conference all season long. Those are starting to kind of trickle away now. They're tied with Minnesota in games played. Vancouver's played one fewer game than they have. So that's why it's important when you got all these games in a short amount of time, like we've talked about, you got to start winning them. And I was really impressed last night. Maybe the most impressive part last night to me was there was never a time where I felt like the Predators were just like under siege. Like I thought they were always in control of that game. I mean, Dallas had maybe one or two looks where you were just like, oh, UC Soros is going to have to make a good save.
Yep. He made a couple really good ones.
And he did. But other than that, like, was there ever a time in that game where you thought that Dallas was kind of clawing their way back into it? I didn't think so.
No, they didn't. They weren't just cycling on them, and they didn't. I thought that they really did a good job of you know, clearing the zone and staying in front of Soros. I mean, there was the one Ben was right in front of him alone.
Yeah,
early, and Soros made a big time save, and yeah, maybe one or two other times when they create a chance, but no, it wasn't like a lot of these games we've seen where the opponent is just, you know, just wearing them down and making them work so hard in the defensive zone. I thought they just looked like a solid hockey team. And the atmosphere in Bridgestone, you know, you had that late timeout, kind of standing O. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, again, kind of felt like the old days sort of thing in there, which we've seen a couple times in the last month, but still not as often as it should happen. But that was I thought last night's crowd, and again, of course, you know, the city right now is banding together in the face of these tornadoes and the tragedy and all the work that needs to be done. And I think that's part of it. I think the bottom line of a hockey game is if your hockey team plays like that, your crowd's going to react to it. And they did.
They did. Yeah, I thought it was a really, really cool environment last night. We're going to continue this discussion when we come back. Also hear an exclusive interview with Kyle Turris, given by our own Chase McCabe. That'll be next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Marquise Munson behind the glass. Marquise, it's been a rough week for you. Alabama loses to Vanderbilt.
Man, who says you had to mention that?
The Dodgers yesterday lost to the Oakland Athletics.
Man, it is
spring training baseball. What's your level
training
of concern?
It is spring training.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned. Look, if we're losing to the A's in spring training,
losing to the A's now, how do you expect
that's
to beat
bad
them in the regular
it's
season?
It's World Series or bust for this team.
I know,
and this is not a good start to the World Series or bust train.
I can't wait to see you freak out all year long about this.
Oh, I can't wait. And then the Lakers—they got to play the Clippers this weekend, and yeah. I'm like, oh man. This is going to be a bad weekend for me.
It's a tough week.
The one-seeded Lakers may lose to the Clippers in the season series. And then what is that going to do for the postseason?
They look he's freaking out already.
Ah!
So do you have any love at all for the Clippers?
No.
No.
Like,
no,
does anybody in LA?
Well, I mean, there were people. You know how there's teams that like don't get a lot of love, so then you show them love because it's like, yeah, I want to be different. I want to be the outsider.
Yeah, I like those people.
Yeah, I like
stop being a front runner.
But I wasn't. Look, I'm Lakers back when like Eddie Jones was the best player on the team. I'm just saying. This is before Shaq.
Way back. Back in the day.
This is way before Shaq and Kobe. But no, it's just like people have – it's a niche. But I liked them. I had respect for them when they had like Zach Randolph and they had Chris Kaman, Corey Maggette. Like I still followed them, but I wasn't like a fan. And then obviously they also had an owner that I didn't.
I really enjoy. Really
care for him. Not many people care for him.
No, they did not. The new owner. I really enjoy watching Steve Ballmer have press conferences. They're very.
I love it.
Entertaining, I guess the word for it. Slightly awkward.
Chris Kaman, man. That's
Chris
Kaman.
That's a great
Central
reference.
Michigan's own Chris Kaman.
There's always a Michigan connection.
That's right.
If you look hard enough, it's always
we
there.
We will find one.
That's right.
That's right.
Well, it was a big night last night for the Predators. A 2-0 win against Dallas, and I was going to the locker room after the game. Doing my thing, talking to players. Get over to the Dallas side, and their coach, Rick Bowness, he was not happy at all about how that game went last night. He was basically very similar to what John Hines was saying on Monday night against Edmonton. The compete level wasn't there, wasn't where it needed to be. You know, they've lost four games in a row now. So the chances of them catching St. Louis and Colorado at this point, while not impossible, pretty unlikely, I would say. So Dallas is probably pretty firmly into that three spot. But he made the point to say the Stars coach last night, you know, we hadn't done anything yet. We hadn't even clinched a playoff spot. So to that point, Joe, and you brought this up earlier, it's nice the Predators got that win, and they better be ready to go on Saturday at 1 o'clock because I have a feeling and a suspicion that Dallas is going to come out with a lot of desperation, a lot of hunger in that game. And if you're the Predators, that should be fine because you should have the same thing really in every game as you move forward now.
Yeah, and Dallas, I mean, we talked with Sean Shapiro yesterday about Dallas. You know, the offensive struggles, that's a concern with that team, which is kind of hard to believe given some of the talent they have, but that's just – there's always the other side of it. You know, it's like the Preds played a solid game.
Yeah.
Well, the opponent's more thinking about how they didn't, you know, match up. They didn't rise to the level needed. So they're kind of scuffling right now, four in a row. I agree with you. You know, they should be desperate. It's a huge game for them. They're probably fine right now. I mean, the Wild – It's pretty wild that the Wild is where they are, but
wow,
you know,
I see what you did there.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah.
My goodness,
it's unfortunate, but 7 points, you know, behind the Stars. You know, I mean, you got 15 games to go. I mean, anything could happen, but this was I don't know. Like, I didn't think the Stars were like skating around aimlessly or anything.
No,
but
no.
I'm used to seeing that particular line look more dangerous than it did, and for whatever reason that did not look like the same Stars team that we're used to lately really kind of handling the Predators when they match up.
I thought so too, and our good friend Chase McCabe from Darren Donick and Chase, who also obviously is a part of the Nashville Predators radio network, he caught up with Preds forward Kyle Turris after the game last night. Here was that conversation.
First, let's start with, everything that happened earlier this week. I know you guys were on the road. Come in here, a lot of emotion in the building tonight to get those 2 points, to get that win. A little extra special with everything going on.
Yeah, just be able to have something positive for people of the city to look at. I mean, it was awful, and our thoughts and prayers are with everybody affected. And, we're going to try and do things to help out where we can.
There was also a lot of emotion because you're playing a Central Division opponent in Dallas, first meeting between the two teams since the Winter Classic. Is that something a little extra that gave you guys some motivation?
Yeah, no, like you said, they're a big rival and within our division. And, I mean, we have a history with them. So, it was a real big game based on that, but also obviously based on the standings and setting up the first half of back-to-back against them. So.
Score on the power play twice tonight. I know special teams continue to be something that you guys work on, and not only was it power play goals, but it was two guys looking to get in the scoring column in Forsberg and Duchene.
Yeah, no, our special teams tonight was great. Our penalty kill came up real big when we needed it, and like you said, our power play able to score on two of the opportunities. It won us the game.
Your goaltenders have been pretty good lately, but UC getting a lot of the starts, get him the shutout tonight also has to feel good.
Yeah, he's playing phenomenal. He's giving us a chance to win every night, and we just trying to help him out where we can.
That was Chase McCabe with Kyle Turris after the game last night, a big 2-0 win for the Preds against the Stars. And, Joe, it got me thinking about, you know, special teams this time of year especially. I mean, it could be the total difference, not only in a game, it could be the difference in a playoff series. A lot of times, it is the difference in a playoff series. And for the Predators, especially with their penalty kill, I'm not really ready to anoint their power play yet or anything like that. It's one game.
No.
But the penalty kill has been trending in the right direction for a little bit now. And to get that part of your game figured out, that's got to be helpful as you move down the stretch here, because every goal is going to be, I mean, these games are going to be close for the most part. I know the Edmonton game happened the other night. Most of the time down the stretch here, these games are going to be close. One goal, two goal games. And special teams is going to play a big part on whether or not you make the playoffs or not. So to get the penalty kill you know, for most of this year, it's been the worst in the entire league. To get that trending back in a positive direction at this time of year is really important. We'll see if they can continue to do the same with the power play as well.
I mean, it's weird that they've had that issue, too. I mean, they've been very solid for since I've been here.
Years.
On the penalty kill. And then this year, all of a sudden, it's been an issue. Yeah, they looked very solid there last night. And they just looked very solid overall. And you know, smart with the puck, too. You know, smart with the puck in the defensive zone and not making those big mistakes that they seem to make too often that often lead to problems for them. So just an all-around sound, solid effort. That's exactly what you got to do. I mean, that's playoff hockey too. And then if you get there, you're gonna, you know, you're gonna be in games like that. You want to be able to play like that.
And everybody just, I think, assumes that once the playoffs come around, that the officials just swallow the whistles and you play games 5-on-5. We saw firsthand last year how important those power play chances are when you get them. And the Predators didn't score on any of them last year in the playoffs. And there were a lot of differences in that series. They didn't deserve to win. I think Dallas was the better team in that series. You score two or three power play goals in that series, maybe it's totally different. And that's something you want to start feeling good about down the stretch here. And if you do get into the playoffs, if you're confident in both of those areas, that could be a difference maker in a series.
Yeah, and I don't know that I really came away from last night thinking like they found something, you know, revolutionary in the power play.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about Forsberg's goal. I mean, he ripped one and he got it through. But just to see it go in is a good thing because the power play last year, I still think of all the things that, I mean, what they handed off to everybody. Everybody got a crack at it. They tried all these different people. But I think it just became this thing where they were just overthinking it because all we talked about was power play. All they talked about was power play.
Yeah.
It becomes this thing. So it's not a thing anymore. It hasn't been good. Hasn't been good enough. But it's not like this, you know, mental block for this team right now. So when you can have a game like that and you get two on the power play, that's big. And like you said, moving forward, you got to be able to produce some on that thing.
Absolutely. And they moved it really well. Like, that was one thing. Like, a lot of times this year, you just had guys standing there and just standing around. Yeah, they'll pass the puck around, but nobody's really accomplishing anything when they're passing the puck around because the movement's not there. They were zipping that thing around last night, and I was like, who is this? What's gotten into them? How about that?
Well, speaking of that, Roman Josi made a few plays last night. We talked about, like, he made a play. I don't think it was on the power play, but basically weaved through the entire Dallas Stars team and somehow sent it backhand cross ice to Craig Smith in front of the net. No idea how he saw it, how he got it there. They didn't quite connect on it, but he made, again, like a few plays last night. You're like there's nobody like that guy out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's just insane. That's what it boils down to. And he's another assist last night. He's got a 5-game point streak. I just don't know what else there is to say about him. He's had an unbelievable season so far, a Norris Trophy worthy season. May not win it, but it's been a Norris Trophy-worthy season for Roman Josi. When we come back, Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. How do we figure out this Tennessee Vols basketball team? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, the sweet, sweet sounds of Rocky Top. Music to Munson's ear behind the glass. Welcome into Morning Drive. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Tennessee with a big week this past week. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we bring in our good friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, man? Thanks for coming on with us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Josh, you have to help me here because I thought after Arkansas and after the debacle that was the Arkansas game, that it was over. They didn't have any chance whatsoever to climb back into this race here. And since then, they've beaten Florida, a comeback win against Kentucky. How in the world do we figure out this Tennessee Vols basketball team?
Well, I think we figured out that Tennessee is better off being down 17 than up 17 over the last couple of weeks. After giving up the lead against Auburn and 19 points, they gave up 18 of them against Florida, but they held on against Florida. And I still came out of that game thinking, okay, that's a really nice win for Tennessee. It's your rival. It's at home. You have a huge crowd. And that was going to be a nice note for the end of the season. With Auburn, a very winnable game, I didn't think that Kentucky was winnable. And I definitely didn't think that Kentucky was a winnable game for Tennessee when the Vols were down 17 points. But they didn't think that way. And they actually did look back at the Auburn and Florida games. And Rick Barnes said that while they're in the timeout, they're saying, look, these teams came back against us. This is what we have to do. And to their credit, they pulled it off. And I did not see that coming with a team that has looked like it was running out of gas, and they've had their starters playing 36, 38, 40 minutes in some cases. I mean, think about Josiah Jordan James. Last week, he goes scoreless with six turnovers against Arkansas, and then maybe the two best games of his career, or in his freshman season, of course, have come against Florida and Kentucky. And what he did in the second half against Kentucky was remarkable. And Fulkerson leading the way is the biggest story out of this. And I think often we use the word unbelievable in sports, and it's not really that unbelievable. It's just impressive. This, I can't really believe what we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, James in particular, Josh, you know, 16.7 rebounds, 5 assists, and just, you know, great defense late. He had a really big stop on Maxey, just textbook defense using his length, and just made some plays, some heady plays in that game. You're like, wow. Like, you know, it was like he was sort of just in control out there. Do you think this is him finally getting past the injury thing, or just sort of a freshman maybe just gaining some confidence finally that maybe he didn't have a few weeks ago?
Well, it's probably both of those things, and I would say that his confidence comes partly from feeling better. Rick Barnes did say this week that this is the healthiest that Josiah has been this season, and if he's feeling better out there and more confident in what his body's able to do, he's probably more confident in his game as well. And what he's done this week, these past two games, that is what I think fans and that's what Tennessee's coaches and Josiah himself expected him to be able to do. He's not going to be a big-time scorer, I don't think. He still has the ability to do that. And a lot of times this season I've talked about needing to get to the free throw line, draw contact, make plays, and he was able to do that as well. But it's also about making plays for his teammates, and his defensive ability, because of his length, as you mentioned, his ability to rebound the basketball has been consistent season, and his passing ability, his ability to distribute, set other guys up, has been apparent as well. So this past week, it's all come together. Now, does that mean it's going to happen against Auburn? Not necessarily, but if he is feeling more comfortable with what his role is in the offense, and he's healthier, and that allows him to be more explosive, because when he walks out on the floor, he's one of the best athletes on the floor. I think we see the results. It makes a big difference in his game, and good for him, because it's been a tough year where, again, he expected things to go a lot differently, and he has a chance to at least close the season out on that kind of note.
Josh, when you take a look at the Auburn game, it goes without saying that it's an absolutely huge game, but what would a win against Auburn do for them in terms of their NCAA chances? I've seen a couple of projections this week where right now they're the first four out. What would a win against Auburn do in terms of putting them right on the bubble heading into the SEC tournament next week?
Yeah, I don't think that beating Auburn puts Tennessee in the NCAA tournament, but it does keep the conversation alive, and I think everybody agrees that it's a must-win for Tennessee if Tennessee is going to go after an at-large bid, meaning avoiding having to win the SEC tournament to get in. If Tennessee wins this weekend, then I think there's a realistic way for Tennessee to win a couple of SEC tournament games in the NCAA tournament. And yeah, a lot of that is set up by this past Tuesday's win against Kentucky. Things are also kind of weird right now when you look at the quadrant system, and what Florida does against Kentucky could affect Tennessee, because Florida right now is a quad one win, and it's not like if Florida's the 28th ranked team versus the 33rd ranked team in the net, which would change whether it's a quad one or quad two win, whether that changes that much. But if it's that close and you're on the bubble with a bunch of other teams, a number of things could come into play. That's why Tennessee needs to take care of business. It needs to beat Auburn. The Thursday game probably doesn't help Tennessee that much from a resume standpoint. It just allows Tennessee to advance and get another resume builder on Friday. So I think right now Tennessee has to be of the mindset, beat Auburn, win a couple of games in the SEC tournament, get to Saturday, and you have a shot to get in. And think about also how remarkable this is. Tennessee still this season has not won three consecutive games against major conference teams. If Tennessee wins this weekend, it'll be the first time this season that will have happened, and it would have been in the toughest stretch of the season, Florida, Kentucky, and Auburn. And so for Tennessee, the inconsistency, the ups and downs, for it to even put itself in this position, I think that's remarkable. So that tells you how incredible the accomplishment is if Tennessee beats Auburn on Saturday.
Yeah, and, you know, you can easily look back right now, Josh, and say, the South Carolina game, had it, let it go at the end. You can look back at Texas A&M. Excuse me. You can look certainly back at Auburn and think about where this team would be had they just held on there. But this is where they are, and at least they still have a chance. The concern I have, and you mentioned depth earlier, I mean, you're talking about Fulkerson, who was unbelievable, by the way, 39 minutes. I mean, Kentucky has to, like, double Fulkerson all night. Or give, you know, think about that. You know, think about what he is compared to probably what we all thought. But Bowden plays 38 minutes. Pons plays 39 minutes. Also, by the way, he's 3 for 3 from three. And to me, when he can hit some jumpers, that changes his team. But those guys playing that kind of minutes, and then you're in a tournament where you're playing every day, that's just not ideal. I know Jalen Johnson came off, played 17 minutes, hit a couple big shots, but is there somebody else? Like, can a Gaines, you know, become more of a factor? I mean, is Plavsic, does he have any chance here before this season ends to, you know, do more than come off for a couple minutes and get a couple quick fouls and sit back down?
Well, maybe, but the issue seems to be Rick Barnes' confidence in those guys, because at the end of the Florida game, Rick Barnes said that his assistant coaches said, hey, we need to get some of these guys in here and spell these starters. And Rick said, no, we're going to ride it out with these guys. So nobody off the bench for Tennessee in the Florida game played more than 4 minutes, or at least 5 minutes if you break it down by seconds. So they've counted on the starters. Now, you mentioned Jalen Johnson. He was critical in the Kentucky game. He played 17 minutes, and those threes he hit kind of kept Tennessee in it. And he scored 8 points. They won by 8. And the math doesn't work out exactly to where, you know, he was the difference, but he played a big role in it. And that's why I think everybody has to step up. But at this point, it seems like Rick Barnes' plan is we're going to ride the starters as much as we can. Gaines is a guy that's really important for what they do defensively, so I would not count him out. But from an offensive standpoint, it's really on that starting five, and then you hope Jalen Johnson's able to do something for them off the bench. And you mentioned E. Pons. He's been dealing with tendonitis in his knee over the last few weeks, and he's still going out there and playing 36, 38 minutes as well. Josiah, with his injury issues, he played 40 minutes against Florida last week, and so that adds to the conversation as well. And I guess we can still ask how much gas is left in the tank, but so far it's been just enough.
Yeah, Eve Pond's tendonitis, which means he only has like a 47-inch vertical now.
Yeah, watch him play. You can't tell that he's dealing with kind of – we should all be so lucky to deal with that kind of physical issue.
Yeah, so last one, Jordan Bowden, senior day for him. Josh, you know, obviously he's had struggles this year. He's kind of broken out of them lately. I've been really impressed. I think a lot of times a shooter who's struggling to that extent, it's going to affect the rest of the shooter's game. And I feel like Bowden has done everything else that Rick Barnes has needed from him all year. What do you think Jordan Bowden's legacy will be at Tennessee?
Yeah, Jordan's legacy, I think, should be that he was a guy that played a big role in a lot of wins, and he was a guy that was incredibly respected by his teammates and a lot of fun for fans to watch. And it's been tough to watch at times his shooting struggles this season, but his effort never changed. And one thing I've tried to point out this year, while he was clearly struggling shooting the basketball, you don't have to tell anybody for them to know that that's the case, I did try to point out a lot that his defense was at a high level, because that was really important. And if you look at the numbers and see why Tennessee has at least stayed in it this season, it's been because of the defense. Tennessee's been really good on that side of the floor for a lot of this season. That was with Lamonte Turner going out for the year, and he was their best defender and a guy that was going to be really important guarding on the perimeter. Santiago Vescovi comes in, and he's been a really important player for Tennessee's team. But he's had some limitations on defense. Bowden's been a really good defender, even while he was struggling on offense. So a guy that's won a ton of games. He scored a ton of points in his career, and he still helped lead the way in the scoring department for Tennessee this season. And if Tennessee knocking on the door of the NCAA tournament, they don't come anywhere close to that happening without Jordan Bowden as well. So I know it's been frustrating that for him, for maybe the coaches, for fans watching, that he didn't rise to being a guy that could absolutely lead Tennessee's team offensively. But I would also say it's probably not his game. He's more of a role player who can do a number of things to help the team, and he's done that for 4 years at Tennessee.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest. Josh, thanks so much for taking time to come on with us, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, you got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Josh.
It is going to be interesting to see tomorrow if Tennessee is able to get the job done, if they're able to beat Auburn at home, where does that put them heading into the SEC tournament? And then what can they do with it once the SEC tournament gets here? And speaking of that, we'll talk about that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad. We'll be right back to talk about some Vols basketball here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville joining us last segment here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Not wearing his athletic hoodie today. Has gone in a different direction this time.
Capital One Bowl.
You cover a bowl game, you get free swag.
Keep that free swag. How much free swag from bowl games, Stanley Cup playoffs, NFL, like how much do you think you have?
I mean, a lot of it's not great. You know, it'll be like a coffee mug like this. This is not from a bowl game, but this is from buying a car. But yeah, I got some sweatshirt. Pyeongchang Olympics, my kid, they gave us great Under Armour bags, which my kid that uses for his school bag. So that was good. But yeah, like this, I mean, this thing is probably, I don't know if it says a year. I think this was like Matt Stafford, Georgia against Michigan State in like 2009.
There's always a Michigan connection, Marquise.
Well, I mean, when you cover if you cover a beat for 20 years, that's when you're going to get the swag. But
like, when's the last time you bought clothes? Like, how much does your wardrobe kind of coincide with the teams that you've covered?
Well, it's a good point because I have some athletic stuff.
Yeah.
Actually, if you want to talk about physically buying clothes, my wife, like, she doesn't trust me to buy my clothes.
It's probably a good call.
So if I have like clothes, like a button down or something, yeah, that's not picked
up
by me.
Yeah.
It's not picked up by me.
Well, you're a smart man.
Which is, I mean.
So for now on, when I see you in the press box, I'm like, man, your wife knows how to pick a good shirt, yes, Joe Rexroad, because that is a great shirt.
But if I look like
shout
a slob, don't say anything, you know?
I'll just be like, yeah, hey Joe,
that's me.
How's it going, Joe? You doing all right today? Yeah, it's good. Okay, shirt's a little wrinkled.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, and that's the thing, too. Not big ironing, but you guys use wrinkle spray? You guys ever use?
Oh, yeah, buddy.
No,
yeah.
I iron.
You iron?
Do you?
Yeah.
Really?
You?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good for you.
My mom taught me how to iron when I was like 7, 8.
Really?
I kid you not. Yeah.
That's
good. She made me learn how to iron. Like, because she's like, I'm tired of like ironing your clothes because they always get wrinkled because all you do is just run around and roll around and stuff and do wrestling moves and all this other stuff. So, no, I'm not ironing your clothes.
You know how lazy I am? Stuff.
I take my clothes, and if it needs to be ironed, I throw it in the dryer, turn mm-hmm. the de-wrinkler on, and just fire that puppy
yep.
up. That's how I iron.
He's dryer guy.
Yeah. Well, there's that.
Dryer guy.
But, like, the wrinkle spray is great. That stuff works.
Oh, yeah.
And then also you can always put it, hang it in the bathroom, too, and turn the shower on
hot.
It
never works for me.
That doesn't work?
No, it doesn't work for me. It never works for me.
You got to let it go for a while.
Yeah, it's got to be
It's got to be steamed in that room for a while. But
That's
the desperation.
Yeah, this
move.
Can't be like a lukewarm thing.
Yeah,
in the
it's got to
be.
It's got to be uncomfortable when you walk in there. Yeah,
which
like
I'm cool
a sauna.
With. That's right. Joe, Josh Ward joined us in the last segment, and it really is amazing trying to figure out this Tennessee basketball team because I think, you know, I'll speak for myself here, but I think you would probably agree. After the Arkansas game, we all thought, okay, it's just probably not going to be their year in terms of making a push for the NCAA tournament. Florida coming up on the road at Kentucky, home against Auburn. I mean, that's a pretty tough stretch. And you felt like at that point, you probably had to win all three of them to put yourself in a position. Well, now they've won two, and they've got a chance to win that third on Saturday against Auburn. And I do wonder, though, you know, you mentioned the minutes that some of their top guys have been playing. You've got a tournament coming up next week in Nashville. Like, at some point, are all these minutes going to catch up to them for their lack of depth that they have? But, I mean, all it takes is one game this Saturday. You win that game, and I think you're right there on the doorstep of getting an at-large bid.
Yeah, Shelby Mass, USA Today right now, has the Vols as his fourth team out. So, you know, essentially four spots from being in the field. You beat Auburn. That's another, you know, that's a high-quality win to add to the resume. And I think you would be right there. Josh was talking about, I mean, it's not great for this team that they're going to have to play Thursday in the SEC tournament because it's not a game that's really going to be helpful. And,
right.
and then you're going to start going to the back. You know, you have to play every day. So I think they're probably going to be, you know, a 7 or 8. So they're going to play like a Texas A&M, an Alabama, something like that on Thursday. You know, you just have to get through it. Yeah, and it won't be easy. They've, you know, they lost to Texas A&M at home. So if you, but if you're a 7 or 8, the good thing about that is that means that on Friday you will play, you know, if you're, you know, if you're the 8, you will get Kentucky.
Yeah.
Now people may say, well, hey, don't want Kentucky. Yeah, you do. You want Kentucky because you really, if you want to feel safe, if you want to earn a bid without having to try to go 4 wins in 4 days and get the automatic bid, you need another win like that. So I think they would be set up, and they may be set up to play an Auburn or LSU or even a Florida on Friday if they're like the 7.
Yeah.
Again, any of those, these are NCAA teams. These are teams that are all going to be in the field. And like Josh said, there's quadrant 1, quadrant 2. Some of them are on the line there. But either way, if you're the committee and you see a Tennessee team that just beat Florida, won at Kentucky, beat Auburn, and then beat one of them again on a neutral site, I think they would go into Saturday in the field. And the problem, Robbie, as we talk about all this is, like, you still, there's so much going on elsewhere that you
like
can't.
Like those random teams making a run through conference tournaments. Yeah, like that could totally derail everything.
If you're a bubble team, you can't have, I mean, let's take the SoCon, the Southern Conference. I think East Tennessee State is going to be in the field either way. I think that they've done enough. I think the best team, it's the best team in the state, yeah, frankly. And I wish they played Tennessee because that would be a good game. But if East Tennessee State loses in the SoCon, well, I think they'll probably get an at-large. So there's one more bid that's taken off the board because whoever wins that tournament is in.
Yep.
It's like Belmont last year got in as an at-large, which was huge for the program. That was another bid taken away because they didn't win the conference tournament. So,
right.
Yeah, like there's so much of it involves that. But I think overall, in general terms, if the Vols do that, win Saturday, win whoever they play Thursday, and then beat one of those top four Friday, I think they would be waking up Saturday in Nashville in the field and then see how things turn out. Obviously, if you can turn that in, you're going to play another one of those teams probably in the semis. Can that line up when you're playing guys 38, 39 minutes, Fulkerson, Pons, you know, especially, you know, James? Can you play at a high level for a third straight day if it got to that? You know, certainly Tennessee and its fans would love to find out.
Yeah, I absolutely would love to find out. And what you said yesterday about this, I think it's probably the most important thing to remember. The tournament, when it comes around, the selection committee is looking for teams that they know can win games once the tournament comes around. It's not putting teams in the tournament just for the sake of putting them in the tournament. You have to prove that you have the ability, or at least convince them that you have the ability to win games once you get there. If Tennessee goes through this stretch by beating Florida and then Kentucky and then Auburn and then getting another big win in the SEC tournament, to me, even if you lose that Saturday, I got to feel like you're in pretty good shape at that point. I really do.
Yeah, probably, unless it just gets crazy out there, which it could. This is the type of year it could get crazy. But, yeah, I think you'd certainly – there'd be a reason to tune in the selection show, you know. And it may be one of those things where, I mean, you know, you may be put like where Belmont was last year and having to play in Dayton to start. But, hey, that's the NCAA tournament, man. That's in the NCAA – and, again, I mean, I talked to Rick Barnes on the phone a couple weeks ago for a – you know, Q&A in The Athletic, and he said, like, if this team gets a bid, he said that this might be as good as an accomplishment, basically, as he's had, because of when you think about all the craziness this team's gone through. And it looked, look, the last 15 minutes at Kentucky, you can't tell me that's not an NCAA team. A few years ago, you know, the NCAA, I don't even know if they do it anymore, but they have the media in. The NCAA committee has like media members who cover college basketball in to do a mock selection.
Yeah,
so I got to, like 5 years ago, I got to do that. And the thing that really stood out to me is you know, people can talk about bad losses and all that stuff, like Texas A&M's not a great loss at home. It just comes down to what do your wins look like, because that is it. It's, we want to put teams in this field that can win games, that are good enough to win games and have demonstrated that. So if you can be inconsistent, be up and down and all that stuff, if you have the big wins to show them, that resonates. And that's why winning at Kentucky, to me, totally changed their resume.
And I was so – and Josh talked about it when he joined us the last segment. I didn't think they had much of a chance at all to go in and win that game. Just from where they are, from a depth standpoint, how well Kentucky had been playing as of late, going on the road to Rupp. I mean, that's as improbable of a win from them, certainly of all of the year that they've had, but I think in quite a while.
I mean, 47-22, they outscored Kentucky in Rupp in the last, you know, 15 minutes of that game. 47-22. This Tennessee team and that Kentucky team. It's honestly one of the most impressive stretches of basketball for, like, a lot of teams that I've seen this season. That was crazy. So now can they pick that up? Bruce Pearl has been a real problem for them.
He has.
And he's beaten some much
Both
better
Tennessee
teams.
And away from Tennessee.
Well, that's true. Let's not start getting into barbecue talk.
Oh, barbecue. Look, I can talk about barbecues anytime we want to.
Bruce Pearl likes barbecues.
He does. That's what I hear.
It's the Al Capone thing with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bruce Pearl likes the tax barbecue, and then Gus Malzahn likes Waffle House. What is going on in Auburn? Auburn's is a strange place.
SEC, baby.
You got to rip Auburn. You just have to somehow find a way to bring it back
to
Auburn.
Oh, was that an Auburn rip? I didn't know that.
Oh, wow.
No idea that was an Auburn rip. I thought that was just stating the obvious, Joe Rexroad. I'm sorry.
I know how you Crimson Tiders are.
Oh, Crimson Tiders? What do you mean, those Crimson Tiders?
Conniving. That's what it is. Just conniving.
Houndstooth.
At least we don't attack Matt Jones. That's
wow. He did go after Matt Jones yesterday. Maybe you'll see him next week.
It's not maybe. It's just a matter of, like, does he have a new foam finger or is it the same foam finger?
When we come back, it was a gigantic win last night for the Nashville Predators against the Dallas Stars and an impressive performance by one guy in particular. I want to get into that. You're listening to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.